Duck South Studios in Oxford, Mississippi.
We're mass communicating.
It's a bold strategy, Cotton. Let's see if it pays off for them.
This is the End of the Line Podcast, powered by DuckSouth.com.
I gave it a 10.
Sweep the leg. You have a problem with that.
And now, here are your hosts, Rocky LaFleur.
Everybody on? Good. Great. Grand. Wonderful.
No yelling on the bus.
Josh Webb.
Sorry I had a fight in the middle of your black pants party.
And Jake Latondras.
And bad news.
Also starring Rob Kroon.
I bet this guy's into the woods $100.
And Bradley Ramsey.
No, Mark, didn't say.
Showtime.
All right, here we go. Hold your ears, folks. It's showtime.
Showtime, everybody! Showtime!
Welcome to the End of the Line Podcast. I'm Rocky LaFleur in the Duck South Studios in Oxford, Mississippi. Just a few days late, but joining me on the other end of the line, Ryan Warden. Ryan, it's so freaking hot out in Kansas right now, it'll make you blow your duck call backwards on TV, won't it?
Yeah, it's pretty hot. It's in the hundreds every day, so. That's funny. Just for the record, I was not part of that.
Oh, that's an inside joke. It's good. It's
yes.
Funny.
So what's going on?
The heat wave has moved into Kansas. Gosh, man, through that Kansas, Nebraska, that part of the world, it is hot, hot, hot.
Yeah, our heat indexes are making things up over 100 every day. We're not getting really storms at night or anything like that to cool anything off. So, I mean, it's still, right now, it's still probably 92, 93 here. Not fun.
Well, Ryan, look, when we left last week, one of the things we missed out on that I specifically said at the end of that episode, I said we were going to come back to today and start off. And one of those things was because we kind of got into it and then we changed the subject. I kind of went chasing rabbits with you and we missed it last week. But before we get into the deal making with the lawyer and your lawyer with the federal government, of course, but you had the feds started pulling in, taking witness stories, what was going on.
You know, the state guys didn't that I know of. But let's kind of reset the time frame here. When we left last week, we were in July. We've lost our hunting dog. We've got initial draft copies of an indictment that is now very thick and it's scary, and you're trying to sort through the terminology and read through it and determine, did that happen? Did that not? Is this something we can argue? Is it something that we can't? Is this true, false, whatever? So you're trying to sort through that type of stuff. So that's where we're at. But you wanted to jump back, and I missed some of it. And that's fine. We'll go back. So during this, you know, that was July. So, you know, February, March time period. And before, so we were probably about 2.5 to 3.5 years into it. I started getting calls from clients. You know, some of those guys hunted with me 5, 6, 7 years, whatever. So these guys were some of the guys that were early on. And they were not just clients, but they were friends. So I started getting calls from some of them, and they were reaching out to me to tell me, you know, hey, what's going on? We heard about this. You know, are they trying to do something with you or what? And I'm like, what are you talking about? Well, I got a call last week, asked me if I had hunted with you before. I told them yes. They asked me what I thought, you know, how my hunt was. This and that. They announced who they were. They were with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. They were conducting a case, basically. They were basically interviewing my clients.
Over the phone? So,
over the phone at first. This was the first part of them. So several of them were like, you know, they just asked me if I'd seen you do anything illegal, if I'd ever talked about doing anything illegal, if I had asked them to do anything illegal. And these, you know, these guys were laughing it off. And of course, it was more serious to me. I knew nothing like that had happened, but it was more serious to me. And so, and they're friends. So that, you know, of course they're joking around about, you know, well, he did this or he did that or he, you know, whatever. I told him about that one time you shot 17 deer from a helicopter. Well, no, because I've never ridden in a helicopter in Kansas. So just joking around stuff. Well, I didn't really think too much about it. I was kind of surprised they were doing that, but I knew how they were doing it. They were going through my hunt waivers and calling the people off my hunt waivers. And so that kind of went away. And, you know, not a lot of people called me, and I'm assuming they called all of them. But which in the meantime was costing me rebookings, was costing me clientele to a certain extent. So I was starting to lose money at that point, but having new clients as well. Well, so then the most shocking call I get was a call that I pick up, and I distinctly remember picking up the phone and saying, "Hey, bud, what's up?" I had the guy's number saved in my phone, and he says, "Those fucking feds drove all the way down here to Arkansas to interview us." And it was him and his cousin. And I said, "Do what?" And he said, "Yeah." He said, we just met them at a hotel. They called us to a hotel and basically interrogated us." And I said, so I started asking the legal questions. Remember, I was a cop. So I started asking the legal questions. I said, "Did they invite you to the hotel, tell you need to come to the hotel, pick you up and take you to the hotel, or what?" "No, they invited us." "And you willingly went?" "Yes." "Okay, so they don't have you in custody, but again, they're interrogating you. You were free to leave. You probably could have stood up and walked out of the hotel. You never tried until the end. So what was said?" And this was part of the foul play, guys. And this goes back to they busted us when they were there, but the year before they had shot footage that was on, it's on YouTube, that 3-day hunt, that the majority of that 3-day hunt's on YouTube. If you look up Misty Morning Outfitters on YouTube, there's like a deal on there for, I think it's Foul Play Outdoors, put it on, it's like 10 minutes, and you can watch the first few minutes of it and see that it's a good shoot. But it's over a 3-day period. It's the shoot that we referred to several times that they kept asking about, and it's the one that I swear on my life, my children's life, that we were not over. We were calling those hunts at like 9:30 in the morning and boogieing out of the field to let them finish in there. And that's how we shot them 3 days in a row. I mean, if we went in there and shot them morning and evening, they wouldn't have stayed there that long. So anyways, they kept keying on this hunt the entire thing. And so they were down there with these guys. Two of them were on that hunt, but they didn't come the second year. And so they went down there and talked to him about the first year and that particular 3-day period, and had him in a hotel room. It was John T. Brooks, and he was the resident agent in charge here in Derby. Kansas, which is, I don't know, 35, 40 miles from us. They start asking him questions like, did, you know, just the typical stuff. Did Ryan do anything illegal? Did he ever talk about doing anything illegal? Did he ever insinuate doing anything illegal? Did he ask you to do anything illegal? Did he ask his guides to do anything illegal? And then they got into specific pictures. They had taken a photo album of mine in the process. And without getting too sidetracked, at one point I had a corn hopper in the back of my lodge, and I unhooked it from the ball of my truck, and it actually lifted me up into the bed of my truck and ripped my pants and whatever, because it wasn't centered right, and we probably had too much corn in it. Well, it dumped like 2,500 pounds of corn back there. So we picked it up and threw it back in there because we needed it for deer feed. And this was November time period. So this pile of corn was laying back there. Well, not real. I mean, maybe a little bit of Jeff Foyle's mentality when you're pushing stuff to the limit and you're pushing things hard. Well, I laid like 13 mallard drakes with their head in a circle on top of that corn pile and took a picture and put it in the book, which was funny and cute at the time, but it wasn't funny and cute later. It didn't really backfire on me, but it doesn't help your case. So they ask about that picture. They ask about another picture where one of those two guys that was being interviewed in the room, it was the classic game strap around the neck, and I've got 35 mallards, widgeon, and pintails on one side, and I've got 35 on the other, and this guy didn't have his gun in his hand, but the classic standing with your gun in your hand, and you've got 70 ducks draped around your neck type deal. So they had that picture from the photo album. And they basically, at that point, I don't know if they thought, surely, I don't know. I don't know if they thought that he shot that many, but at that point, they can see he's in the field. They can see he has possession of somebody else's ducks, or he's shot too many, or whatever. There's no tags on them. And in the field, tagged or not, it doesn't matter. You can't be in possession of somebody else's birds like that. We didn't know that at the time. He didn't either. But the question was asked to him, what birds did you kill? And so he said, I don't know, but everybody was there. And he said everybody was there and we weren't over the limit. So they continued to push him about, you know, because they had on audio recording during that hunt. We were all mic'd up with Sennheiser mics so we could talk to the cameraman behind us of which way we were going to shoot. The birds are, you know, work on these birds on the left, whatever. So we were mic'd up anyway. So at one point, they have audio of me saying, I think that's it on specs. And the way things were going is the specs and the field ducks were coming out first thing in the morning. And we were working our way through those. There was roughly 11 of us in the field. One day there was 11, one day there was 10, whatever. So we could kill roughly 60 to 66 ducks, and we could kill roughly 20 to 22 specs. And so then the dark geese start coming in. Well, when we got close to the limits, I would usually say, hey, I think we're good. Better stop there, because I don't need two ducks left in the limit and 11 guys sitting up shooting. Now, the reality of it is that's against the law at any rate on multiple levels, because there's only two ducks left to fill the limit. So there's only one or two maximum guys that should be shooting. Maybe just one. Maybe somebody shot terrible and their two ducks are the ones left to kill. But at a max, two. Now, we've all been there, and I'm guilty of this. And maybe some of you guys haven't been. But I think the majority of the people have been there where there's four of you sitting in a blind, there's three ducks left to kill, and all four people shoot. Or there's even six ducks left to shoot, and there's five of you in a blind, and all five of you shoot. You can't tell me that somebody, one or two of those people, aren't missing two birds, and you're limited out. And you see it on TV all the time, too. They all do it. We got four ducks left to kill, and four guys sit up out of the blind and shoot. And it's like, wow, you guys all shot the same number of birds going into this, and you know that. That's amazing to me, because they don't know that. So in the easiest way around that for me, which was not legal, was to just call it and say, no. Now, later on in the podcast, we'll get into the legal way to do some of this stuff, but that's not it. I mean, everybody's got to claim their own birds got to go behind them, and technically you don't shoot at the next volley of birds until everybody's claimed the previous bird shot. If they're not claimed, you don't keep shooting, and you claim them individually. You hold up one duck, say, who shot this one? I did. You put it back there and go on. So anyways, back to the hotel. We'll get back to that, some of that legal stuff down the road after we get through this. But they're back to the hotel. Well, the guy flips open his computer and starts to bring up audio and starts to bring up video. Well, his screensaver is the game warden sitting over a pile of birds. Now, one of the guys being interviewed in the hotel room states that he asked the game warden, who shot those birds? And John T. Brooks did not like it at all. So, I asked him, to refresh my memory going on this podcast, I texted him this week. I said, remind me again, I assume they called and request you to meet them. You said, okay, and thinking there's nothing to hide. And then they start interrogating you like a criminal, ? He says, 100% what happened. Any and every question you can imagine about hunting. They tried so hard to get me to say shit about you, but I never had a bad word to say. So I asked him what all they asked. He said the main thing is they had a recording of you saying, I think we're good on specs. Then he shot one, and that's what he got a ticket for. And he said, I told him we were good, and y'all made us shoot the limit and get out of there. He just wanted to get you all so bad for some reason. And then he said, I had it out with him. And I asked him in the text, I said, were we over? I don't recall being over. Often I call being good when we were a bird or two short, if the risk was too high of shooting into another group. He responded, we never went over. Bunch of BS. I was going to go to court, but I received my package in the mail, and it was dated for 2 days after I received it. And then if I didn't pay, I was going to be subpoenaed to court. He still has the ticket in his safe. I said, I was going to say, I think the number of hunts that I was on, I was never over with clients. And if I was, it was a result of an accident. On film, I would have remembered that.
If that would have went to court, and that was used as evidence, and you said, I think.
Yeah. So the guy goes, on, no, I don't think that would, but he, you know, they're leaning on him. And so this guy goes on to tell me this last week. He said, then he had all of my Facebook pics and asked which one I'd killed with pics of me with all the birds. We argued, then his screensaver came on, his computer popped up, and I had him standing over about 30 greenheads. So I asked him which ones he killed and gave him hell. Then he scrolled off the screen and shut up about it. So I was really surprised that they took the time to drive from Kansas to Arkansas to interview these guys in a hotel room. And in the meantime, they were bouncing in and out of one of my guide's house. You know, here in Hutch. And remember, going back, the friendship there with my guides had started to become very distant. I'd got married again. I'd sent them invitations. They didn't even send cards in that were like, kiss my ass or anything. So, you know, and these are guys that you were super tight with, that you loved. I mean, these were, you're like your ride or die guys. But everybody's so shook up that nothing's normal anymore. You're scared. You don't know who's saying what to get out of trouble. You don't know who's doing what to get out of trouble. And I still love those guys to death. And I talk to them now and then, but our relationship will never be the same. It's like an ex-girlfriend. It's never going to be the same. I mean, we could get back together and go hunting this fall when I get out of trouble, and it's not going to be the same. We're never going to be the same. So, you know, and maybe they're smart enough to let go of something that's never going to be the same. I think I struggled with it more because I wanted it to be the same, and I missed it. So, anyways, you know, I was going through ups and downs. My dog was dying. I'd got remarried. Found out, or pretty much found out at that point that she was cheating on me, and it was, you know, one thing to the next. My best friends weren't my best friends anymore. They would be in the same town as me, not talk to me. They were still hunting. I wasn't. Invite them to your wedding, where 2 years, 3 years before that, they would have been in the wedding. And they don't even send a card or say congrats or anything, no text, no phone calls, whatever. I mean, it was hard. It was hard. And we've moved through that now. I talk to them, you know, not as much as I should or not as much as I'd like to. I'm sure they're listening to this podcast and whatever. I mean, they're great guys, but it's very, when I tell you it's very hard on every aspect of your life, it is very hard on every aspect of your life. It's hard on your family, your friends. I mean, everybody's just, you're just now different. I mean, you went from an ex full-time cop, you were a part-time cop. And people respected you. You were on TV and on newspapers and a guide and outfitter and owned your own business and was supporting the community and sub-state volleyball and this and that. And then all of a sudden it's like crickets. Nobody wants to talk to you. Nobody wants to talk to your wife. Nobody wants to talk to your kids. My kids were in school. They're coming home to their mom, which was my ex-wife, and saying, hey, just so you know, Briley, her friend at school, was talking to her today about your case. And so Briley wants to know if you're going to be in trouble and whatever. And at that point, I didn't know. But I knew they weren't just going to go away as much as I wanted them to. So you're trying to figure out how to break the news to your kids. What am I going to tell my kids? And you're still trying to hunt with them. And they're asking you questions like, are you going to be able to hunt next year? And are you going to be able to do this? And because such and such a school said that she heard her dad talking and he said this and he didn't know how much longer you were going to be able to hunt and if we were going to lose our business and this and that. And when you're looking, when you're looking at like a 6 or 7 year old, that's pretty tough to explain some of that, you know. Oh, yeah. Very difficult to not, I don't care how tough you are. You don't want to lie to your kids, but you don't want to worry them either. So it's very, very difficult. So
that's how many people at. How many people do they pull in a room and talk to like that? Do you know?
All I know of is two for sure. But I know they made calls to at least 20. I had at least 20 other people contact me that they had made calls to them. Like in Texas, New York, Pennsylvania, asking them stuff like that. So, extremely difficult. This was in the same time when I was launching the whole competition deal. We're midstream into this waterfowl competition. And so, you know, part of me is thinking it's working, they're coming. But like I said, you're so miserable. And there's not, so they came in 2011. This is 2014. And there's not a single day that went by, not one day, I can promise you, that went by that I wasn't looking over my shoulder waiting to be arrested and humiliated again in public, even though my lawyer told me that won't happen. I just didn't trust them. There wasn't a single day that didn't go by. I would go as far to say probably very few times where an hour lapsed when I was awake where I wasn't thinking, replaying hunts, where I was at, who was there, what were we doing, were we filming, what was said, what was done, what are they looking for. It can't be that. I mean, this whole thing can't be based on tagging. There's got to be something more in there. I mean, I get it, but I've never even heard of this. Nobody's doing it. It can't be tagging. There's got to be more, but it all kept leading back to tagging. So that is extremely, extremely difficult on somebody's mind and mental status. To be sitting, dwelling, you get in your vehicle to take clients out, you see lights turn on a half mile away and start coming down the road when you're picking up a deer hunter to go back to the lodge. I mean, it was a constant, who's that? What's that? You're in the field. You see somebody drive by, slowly, stop. Look. I mean, they could have been checking wheat or whatever, and you're like, what are they doing? I mean, the paranoia and the just everything. You're standing in a store, you walk through Walmart, and somebody's looking at you. Why are you looking at me? You're not buying me. Look at the shelf. But instead, you're staring at me. Do you know me? Do I know you? Or you? Why are you looking at me? Is there three other people going to step out and arrest me, or what's going on? And it just does not, it may sound really stupid because I have a psychology degree, a bachelor's in psychology, and I can only imagine what it sounds like. I know, because when I think about it, I think about how stupid it sounds, but I'm telling you, I guarantee you, you are at that level 24/7. And it just doesn't go away the whole time. So I'm pushing hard in March. And at that point, I'm going to throw this out there loosely, because I love the movie, but you're a little bit like Braveheart. You've already lost everything you've loved, and now you're just fighting. So if you want me, come get me. Here I am. I'm not going to lay down. Come get me. If you want me that bad, and you thought that what I was doing was bad enough to put me in this position right now in my life and take my kids, my soon to take my business, everything else, come get me. I'm right here. So I was really wanting something to happen, and it happened. So back to July, Kurt Kearns goes back and forth with the U.S.
Let me ask you this. We've talked about your lawyer a lot the past few weeks. Great lawyer. Been a part of a lot of federal cases. Had he ever handled game violations like this?
Yeah, he had a huge deal go on down around Medicine Lodge. It ended up being federal. I'm going to give you the loose story here because I don't know it all, but some guys from Texas came up. They had leased some ground and was allowing non-resident hunters to come in without licenses. They were spotlighting deer. And they were killing some big deer, 180-inch deer, allegedly. I don't know. That was the original stories that came out. And I've been on that side of the fence. So, like I said, I'm going to use those terms loosely, and I'm going to use words like allegedly. So they were allegedly providing hunts for guys without tags, spotlighting, shooting deer over 150. They showed up to question them, didn't have a search warrant, left. The guy started burning mounts and horns. So they tried to charge him with tampering with evidence, but there was no search warrant served at that point, and he hadn't been charged with anything, and whatever. I think the guy ended up with 1 year probation, $10,000 in fines. And at that point, my lawyer turned around and looked up on the wall and pointed at about 180-inch whitetail and said, I just shot that a few months ago with him in Texas. So I wasn't really worried about, and he was a hunter. He has hunted as well. So I felt more than comfortable with him defending me. I'd make the same decision over again. The only other person that I know of currently in the United States that I would look at would be Nathan Gilbert out of Colorado. That's all he does is game violations. But I met him after. But so I wouldn't change that.
Okay. Last week, we started talking about the indictment. It came in. He called you into his office. We discussed all that. But, you know, I didn't ask you. I mean, what was his reaction? What was his deal? What did he, man, this is crazy. This is overreached. Or, yeah, they pretty much what I thought they'd get you with.
No, he told me, he said they're just going to throw a bunch of stuff against the wall like spaghetti and see what'll stick. I mean, I'm sitting here looking at it right now, and it's, I don't know, 25, 27 pages. But, I mean, you know, count one, conspiracy to violate the Lacey Act.
Which is a felony.
States. I was a professional hunting guide. Misty Morning Outfitters, and to locate, you know, the address and whatever, and says where I reside and act as a guide, and then it talks about the Migratory Bird Treaty Act. Makes it unlawful for any person to take, kill, possess any migratory bird except with a permit or otherwise provided by regulation. Well, that's where they're going to get you, because you violated some regulation through there. So then, as it gets further into it, it starts talking about what I did. And it said, you know, like this, here's a sentence that I have highlighted. In order to conceal the illegal taking and possession of migratory waterfowl, warden did not properly tag taken waterfowl. And it's just on and on and on. You know, both agents observed fully feathered untagged birds in the freezer, which included two untagged golden-eyed ducks and two untagged common merganser ducks. On December 16, 2010, S.A. Morrison and S.A. Coyle, so Special Agent Morrison, Special Agent Coyle, participated in a goose hunt. Warden helped transport the hunters and equipment. Warden assisted in setting out the decoys and layout blinds, then left to scout additional fields. 10 Canada geese were killed by 8 hunters. He made no attempt to determine who shot which geese and how many geese. The geese were transported back to MMO. They were not cleaned and placed in one of the freezers. At no time were any of these birds tagged. So the whole thing was tag.
Well, the last one, what is the deal with this one? Said that you provided 132 dove breasts. Is that everybody that hunted with y'all in the field or something?
Where they got me, I'm really not that stupid, Rocky, but I apparently was at this point in my life. So I'm looking for it right now, but I'll start explaining it. So they went out on this dove hunt, and me and one of the guys were sitting in a clear different part of the field than them. Right. And this is the dove hunt where I shot off the back of the truck that was parked.
Correct.
But I didn't have my feet on the ground, which I ended up getting charged for later. So Dan and George are at the other end of the field. So here comes Dan. And this was like the 27th hunt they've been on us with. This was one of their last hunts before they came in. And he comes down and he tells me, hey, this morning we shot a few doves. Do we need to count those towards our limit or what? And I said, I looked right at him. And one of my guides was sitting right beside me. The other two were in Canada. I looked right at him and I said, look, Dan, I don't think you're a fed, but I don't know that. And I can't tell you to break the law. So the limit is 15 a day. So he goes back. Let me see if I can find it. So he goes back. He goes back down there to find George Morrison. And they intentionally shot 5 over their limit.
Wow.
Now, what they did was they killed their 15 doves. And they had killed 5 each that morning. So they come back, and they have them in their game pouch. And I pull mine out and count them. And they don't ever say anything. They're like, we're good. We're at our limit. And I don't really question them because I just told them the limit was 15, like 30 minutes before that. The limit's 15 a day.
Hold on. This is a dove hunt we're talking about. Dove hunt
yes.
is not guided. You don't sit beside somebody on a bucket on a dove hunt and say, oh, you're 15. Let's hold up. Let's go back to the truck.
That yes.
You knowingly breaking the law. It's not somebody saying, yeah, man, you ought to shoot a couple of more. 17 is better than 15. You know what I'm saying?
Right. Well, they end up charging me in this plea agreement. They end up charging me for one dove over. I'm looking at the statement right now. Warden indicated that he could shoot one more dove to reach 15 for the evening hunt. However, Warden had also shot and killed one dove earlier during the morning hunt. The warden forgot to count. Warden was at 16 doves.
And that's the only dove that you killed that morning?
Yes, but now going back to that, I didn't shoot that morning. And I specifically remember because I could take you right to the spot, and I took a good friend of mine that had just moved back from Arizona and his wife, and she had never shot doves. So I stood directly behind her and coached her for every shot. And these guys, Dan and George, were about 400 yards, 400 to 500 yards west of me on a ditch. And we were standing around a group of trees by this cut wheat field. And I wondered, I told them all of our dove hunts are in the evening because I'm like, I don't have any good morning spots. I got some great evening spots, but I don't have anything good. In the morning, we'll shoot our limits in the evening. Well, we want to go anyways. We're here. And I remember thinking, you sons of bitches, I don't want to get up. But I'm like, all right. So we went, and I told my buddy, I said, bring your wife. We'll work on some wing shooting stuff. We'll work on some form and whatever. And I just stood there and dedicated that to him and her. I mean, he had shot, but he hadn't done a lot of wing shooting. But his brother was my best friend, and we'd hunted forever together. And he was out in western Kansas. And this other guy, he had moved back to Wichita from Arizona. And I'd known him my whole life. And so I said, you know, I would kind of work with him on the hunting stuff if he would help me guide some deer hunts and whatever. So, yes, they shot over. So I was looking at when I texted you earlier in the week, I was looking at the actual plea agreement. So we'll just get to it. We end up at the
Whoa. I want people to know. Real quick, I'm not going to spend a lot of time on them. We just talked about that one, okay? The first count on the list is untagged birds, just like Ryan said. The second one is a misdemeanor. It talks about Ryan taking one dove over the limit. Third count, Ryan left those 16 doves at his lodge untagged. So that's two counts of tagging, right?
No, what I got into at the plea agreement was...
No. This is just the indictments that you received from
that you met with
your lawyer about.
Yes, that was in the original indictment.
All right, it says you left some more doves somewhere else in storage, and they were not tagged. Another tagging violation. Then you gifted or gave 15 doves to the undercover, and they were not tagged with your signature, phone number, species of bird. You know, everything has to go on a gifting tag. You give Dub or Duck, somebody, you better write a note with all your information on it. I'm telling you.
Yeah, and if it's not the right information, you have to have two. Everybody, and even your state guys will tell you, oh, that's just a gifting tag. Well, in order to gift something, it has to be tagged initially. So it has to be tagged initially with under 50 CFR 2036. And people will argue this. It's gray. It's almost as gray as it gets. It's almost as gray as the law of manipulating a field. And don't even get me started on that. But it's just a very gray area. But you, 50 CFR 2036, the tagging regulation, has to be fulfilled before you can fulfill the gifting regulation, which is 50 CFR 2040. But yes, and then I screwed up because these guys had only dove hunted for 2 days, and I gave them 3 days worth of possession limit. A little over 3 days worth of possession limit.
And the next
I didn't even think about it.
The next count I have on here is, it says you're allowed to them to take over the limit.
Was that the flyover? I'm trying to catch up.
Yeah,
I'm trying to catch up on which page you're on.
This is 9/10/2011.
Okay, warden gift migratory birds.
They shot 20. Like I said, you're not going to stand in the field to make sure. Their 15 years took their word for it when they came out of the field that they were good. And then we talked about you gave them the 3 days of 3 day possession limit, and they only hunted 2 days. You know,
and
to be real honest
with you and everybody out there, it falls back to the same terminology of respecting the resource. We've talked about it with Jeff, you've talked about it with me. I love hunting doves, but I don't know. I mean, I respected the limits, but I didn't. I mean, you know how many times we've shot doves at night and stood at the edge of a field and I've said, hey, it's getting dark at 9:15 or whatever in September. I'm tired. I'm going home, go to bed. I got to work in the morning. You want these doves? Yeah, I'll take them and clean them, throw them on the smoker. I'll bring them back in a week.
Exactly.
Or whatever. I've done it 100 times. I'm not going to mess them. If you want to clean them, okay. I mean, if not, I'll clean them. But
that is the exact point that I'm trying to make to everybody that's listening to this. Simple little things that as hunters, we do all the time. Heads, man. They are raking you over the coals for the simple things that everybody does. And I'm not picking on the feds at all. I'm not.
Yeah, it's their job, and I get it. But right. things that you're not normally being watched by the feds, I would hope not. Or even that close really by your state guys. I mean, some of them, yeah, but they're going to warn you or something, you know, or whatever. I mean, I talked to the state guys after the feds came in. And they said, we had no idea, Ryan. Because I'm like, some of you son of a bitches I ate lunch with and shit, with you and your dads. One of your dads talked about how hawks blew up at his pond when I was trying to figure out how to get hawks off of my pheasant and quail numbers when I was releasing birds out of surrogators. Which, he was clearly indicating when they land by his pond, he shoots them. And so, you know, I don't think the game warden was real comfortable with his dad talking about that, but we were all good enough friends that it was like, whatever, it's just the reality of it. I'd back these guys up on DUIs and stuff at the lake and wrestled people and cuffed people with them and whatever else. So it's like, all right, you fuckers. And I just set on a deer for you guys, like December 8th. That was poached while you came out of Kingman County, which was 45 minutes away. and watch to get a tag number for you, and you son of a bitches couldn't even warn me that they were coming, especially 52 of them, and you guys were part of it. So all of you out there that think the game wardens are your friends or whatever, they might be. But when the feds are coming, they ain't telling the game wardens because they already know the game wardens are your friends. And that game warden may not know shit about tagging because I was texting my game wardens telling them, hey, we're going to be south of Heartland Outdoors 2 miles if you want to come check us. I mean, there's no point in playing games with them. If you want to come check us, come check us. Or if you're off in the morning, we got a good shoot if you want to go. I ask them all the time. And they're like, well, we're working. And I'm like, well, this is where we're going to be, so you can come check us. And it was civilized conversation. We never had any issues at all. If we did, if something happened that was wrong, we would call, hey, look, we had a group of guys. There was a nine-year-old. We shot into these birds. Spec season's closed, and we got a cripple out here walking around the decoys. Had a guy shoot a small buck once. Thought it was a doe. Horns were behind his ears. Called the game warden. Said, hey. Said, no problem. I'll come. We'll come take care of it. Let the guy keep the meat, everything. And I like him. I mean, there's... I don't really not like any of the state game wardens. Kevin Jones, but he's retired. He was a colonel of Kansas that couldn't answer a state straight question when you ask him about tagging. Didn't want to help anything, but he's retired, so I don't have to worry about him. But, I mean, it's just different. The feds are coming in with a different deal. They have no obligation to you. They don't care. Their kids don't go to school with your kids. They don't live in the same town as you. They don't live in the neighboring town.
So they're cold.
Yeah, very cold. I mean, I told you my ex-wife made that joke to them guys once about when I say such and such, you're supposed to laugh, and that guy just stood there. And she was obviously being sarcastic, but was trying to lighten the mood a little bit. And he was just standing there with his arms crossed.
Right. I've always heard that. I've heard that from multiple people that spend a lot of days with them. And that's how and why they get their job.
Mm-hmm. Very true.
Man, I hate to prolong the plea agreement till next week, but looks like that's where it's going because we are out of time.
You know, they blame me for this. You realize that, right?
Who did?
They blame me because we're not to the plea agreement. I'm going to be getting text by noon tomorrow. Why don't you guys hurry up? They're going to be yelling at me, Rocky.
Hey, you know what, though? I think the light at the end of the tunnel for you in all of this, not only for the feds, and I know it was a costly light, but, man, you're kind of the Christopher Columbus of tagging. I mean, you were the guy that really put it into people's minds that you need to be tagging birds.
That's the goal. That's the end goal. You know, when I went to the police academy, they used to tell us, you don't want case law made because of you. And I remember thinking, you have to be pretty stupid to go out and do something to where case law is written about you. Like the Miranda laws. The Miranda rights were written because they wouldn't let Mr. Miranda go and continued to question him and didn't let him go. So therefore, case law was made that became federal, that was U.S. versus, or Miranda versus U.S. So you don't ever want case law made because of you. But now that it was made because of me, when it comes to tagging, like I told the judge, I will do everything humanly possible to not let somebody else go through what I have. Because I don't know how many of you have listened to all these podcasts, but when I'm trying to explain how it wrecks your life and how upset you are, hopefully some of you are getting that and it's soaking in. And I don't want you guys to be in those shoes, even though I don't know you. I would never wish that on anybody, much less a fellow woodsman or a hunter. So hopefully 50 years from now, if the law hasn't changed, then everybody will be tagging. Everybody will be, the law will be much clearer. And somebody can look at their son and say, you know what? 60 years ago, a guy got in trouble and started making better decisions and educating the public. And that's why we do what we do today. And we don't have to worry about that type of stuff. That's the plan of now, because it's been, it's 2019. It's been a miserable, rough 8 years. It's getting a lot better now. But where we're at in the story in July of 2014 is still miserably rough.
Would you ever sit down and drink a beer with Morris and Cole?
Yeah, I would love to.
I'd love
would
to.
I would love to. Hear that side of it. I couldn't get a hold of Brooks at Derby. I'll make this short, but I couldn't get a hold of John T. Brooks at Derby. He would never call me back and whatever. And you know what? He was a resident agent in charge in Kansas for a long time, and he's not anymore. And I don't know if that's because I got a hold of somebody higher up and said he won't call me back or what, but he's no longer in Kansas. And that's good riddance for him to get on down the road. And so I called Colorado, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Services, to try to work through all this tagging and, you know, recording them and asking them questions. You know, not necessarily recording them to use it against them, but recording them so I could go back and listen to it and learn from it. Like it's like taking notes in school. I mean, you're literally trying to educate yourself on something that nobody knows anything about. And so I called, and the very first time I called, said, you know, pre-recorded message came on. Thank you for contacting the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Services Migratory Game Bird Division. You know, the contact number, the extension to your contact or whatever, dial it now. If not, for special agent Anne-Marie Sharkey, dial 222. For Special Agent Stacy Campbell, dial 223. For Special Agent Dan Coyle, dial 224. And you want to talk about your heart sinking. And this was before I had seen plea agreements or indictments or anything that stated Dan Coyle was actually a Fed. I mean, I knew he was a Fed, but for 3 years I'd sit around and wondered about it. And while I was trying to build a website with proper information and make a tag and do everything like that, you call to get information to make sure that what you're putting down is correct, and you hear Special Agent Dan Coyle, dial 224. And I dialed it, and he answered the phone. And I have the recording as of today. And I said, he said, "This is Dan." And I said, "Hey, Dan, how's it going?" And he said, "Good, man. How are you?" He said, "Good, man. How are you?" I said, "Oh, I've been better." And he said, "Oh, yeah?" And I said, "Yeah." I said, "You're a hard man to get a hold of." And he said, you should have just called my cell. And I said, I didn't have it anymore because you guys took my phone. And he said, we did? I said, yeah, your buddies did. And he said, who is this?
Oh, man.
I said, you been to Kansas anymore? And he said, I said, you still hunt Kansas? And he said, yeah. And I said, he said, what about you? And I said, nope, not for another 5 years.
Dang.
And I said, nope, not lately or something. And he said, I didn't say 5 years because he would have known then. I said, no, not lately. And I said, you haven't been with me for a while. And he said, Ryan Warden. I said, how's it going? And he said, good, man. He said, upright and breathing, the rest is gravy. I'll never forget him saying, upright and breathing, the rest is gravy. And I'm thinking that's a good way to look at it because I'm miserable as shit, dude. I'm sitting in the Staples parking lot in Hutch, Kansas, and I could cry because I'm so, like, what you thought is now confirmed that they were agents. You know that now. And so we went on from there, and I said, when did you get married? And he said, we're not going to talk about that. And I said, dude, I'm no threat to you or your family. I'm not. I said, I know you're doing a job, but I said it did hurt my feelings because I thought we were friends. You know, you guys called and texted all summer and stuff like that. And I said, I thought we were better friends than that. It just hurt my feelings. I'm not after your family or whatever. But I said, I was just curious because when you guys came the last time, obviously I saw your wedding ring and said something about it, and you made up some story about you just got married on a whim, and I'm thinking no. And he didn't want to talk about it. And I said, how's George? And he said, he's retired. I said, has his son graduated college yet? Yeah. I said, well, when you see him, tell him hi. So yeah, I would love to sit down and hear like what they did. Yeah, I mean, George is retired. Maybe you can get him to come on the show. I don't know. I doubt it. But it'd be interesting to hear what they were doing behind my back. Because remember, one of them was sleeping downstairs, pulling a mattress down 27 stairs because the stairs were old wooden hotel stairs that were squeaky.
Yeah.
So he'd pull the mattress downstairs into the living room area that was solid cement floor with just like laminate tile over it, didn't make any noise. And that's where all the camera equipment and everything else was, freezers. So I'm sure he was up all night going through. My hunt contracts were in there. You know, you'd be able to hear him coming. So yeah, it'd be real interesting to hear and ask him, what would you have done if I'd have shown up to elk hunt with you guys when you invited me to elk hunt? Because if I wouldn't have been going with Brackett, I would have went out there elk hunting, and I probably would have done my own search on their house the minute the lights went out.
Well, Ryan, next week, plea agreement. That is where we are headed.
Okay.
Get into the details of how y'all negotiated that all out, because we know that all the charges, majority of them, were tagging or... Well, we're not going to revisit that, but like I said, we'll jump into that next week. So Ryan, thank you again. We want to thank all of you that listened to this edition of the End of the Line podcast, powered by DuckSouth.com.